Julian just said the subject was a big subject. Well, I think three letters is quite small, but maybe that's just me. But that isn't the subject. I decided it was a bit cruel to try and get the real subject on the board, because the actual subject is probably something like why, and on. Because you've had it in your life, haven't you, where someone's been and asked you why, and you give them an answer, and they ask why again, and you give them another answer, and they ask why, and they give you another. And in the end you get to because. Just because. But that's how, when we're young, we learn, isn't it? We ask why. And the most likely people we ask why of are our parents, because they're there. And after all said and done, our parents know everything when we're very young, don't they? That's what we think, anyway. And these why questions can help them learn, can't they? And to question the world around. So if you get a why question from somebody small, then we should always try and answer it, shouldn't we? And if you can, you can try and turn the question round a bit and try and get them to look into the answer and find it for themselves. And then next time, say again, why, maybe they'll know where to go to look. And when I was young, they had these things, books called encyclopedias, and you looked inside those and you could find the answer. Nowadays there's something called Google. And apparently, when life gives you questions, Google has the answers, is what it says, in very small print. And maybe that's the case, but I'm sorry, Wikipedia might be held in high regard, but it's open to abuse, shall we say. And maybe more of that shortly. On holiday I saw some t-shirts that I quite liked, and I thought maybe I'd share some of them with you. This is obviously the first one's my favourite. I don't need Google, my wife knows everything. To balance it out, that's the husband version. And then we get to the truth, that about 13 or 14, my children know, is what I understand from you parents. But at 13 or 14, the children stop asking questions and start being convinced that they know far more than their parents. And then I don't know what age you have to be to realise that your parents did actually know what they were talking about afterwards. Well, after all, maybe it's never. So, they're places you can look for answers, aren't they? But I'm more interested in the fact that we don't ask why very often nowadays. Is it because we're ashamed to admit we don't know? Is it we're embarrassed? Or have we just lost that childlike wonder about finding out about stuff and the need to learn? So I want to turn the clock back and I want to consider various creatures and I want to actually ask why about them. Why do they do certain things? Why do they have particular abilities? And why do they even exist at all? And then let's go a bit bigger and look around this world right now and go, all of what we can see and touch and smell and hear could have failed to exist if it all evolved. And the final thing is about evolution is, I don't understand why I can't fly like Superman. Because if I was the best and at the top of the chain of evolution, then flying would be really useful, because cars are so slow. I think it's about 12 mile an hour average now that you can get around when I go to work and back. So it doesn't matter what car I've got, I'm going to do 12 mile an hour on average getting to work and back. It's 8 miles and it can take me 40 minutes, it can even take me an hour, and then it's 8 miles an hour. And it's pathetic, isn't it? So I need to be able to fly, yet I've failed to evolve, and I can't see anybody here with feathers sticking out of their back starting to grow wings. So why not? And then there's all the creatures that are meant to have turned into birds at some point in the past. Why aren't those creatures growing tufts of feathers out the back now? So that they're evolving into being, you know, flying birds? I don't understand it. So why can't I fly is my first question. So I started to look at birds. Despite gravity, they can fly, can't they? And I think that's amazing. So I want to talk about this one in a moment, but in general, birds eat food that's very easy to digest and very quick, because they can't carry excess weight or store much food, because it ruins their ability to fly. I mean, that's why they have limits on how much luggage you take on your Ryanair things. And birds have like hollow bones, they're the absolute minimum strength they can be to keep the weight down. And their hearts specially designed, as far as I'm concerned, for the rigours of flight. I'm told that if a human operated at the same speed and level as a hummingbird, then our hearts would beat 1260 times a minute. Our body temperature would be over 385 degrees. Basically, you'd burst into flames. And just to make sure that you've eaten enough food to carry our body weight and fly around, you need to eat 1,300 hamburgers a day. And maybe wash it down with about 60 litres of water. So maybe that's why we do need Ryanair. And maybe that's why I've not managed to evolve into flying myself. But like I say, if you believe in evolution, you've got to believe that reptiles one day started to grow wings out the backs, and they didn't just pluck them off because they're in the way or itchy. No, they let them grow into full-size wings over however many millions of years. And then obviously they had to learn to climb trees so they could jump out so they're high enough to use these wings that they've grown. That all sounds a bit silly and far-fetched to me. And can you imagine all the ones that climbed up the tree and jumped out to fly and had only got one wing or one and a half wing and then crashed and burnt and died? It's not really making a lot of sense to me. And then there's a transition from land to air or land to sea or sea to land, because not only is life meant to come out of the sea onto the land, it's actually meant to have gone from the land back to the sea again, which I'll show you some examples of, which seems even sillier. But this is a super swallow, as I'll call it. It can do 35 miles an hour. And boy, can it outperform the best fighter jet in the world. This particular bird was photographed and it's coming into a barn, and there's a gap there, 2 inches wide. Its wingspan is 14 inches. So it flies straight at it at 35 miles an hour, and at the last minute flips. Squeezes like this, and gets through to feed its chicks. Why? It's too much ability. It's amazing the acrobatics that that bird can do. It doesn't need to do that, because it can actually fly around the top and come in down the massive hole in the same bum. But it goes in that way, and it seems to have operated, according to the chap that's photographing, a one-way system. So they all, both mother and father came in that way and flew out of the big hole. But they didn't come in and out of the big hole. You know, this one-way system, and I would say, why would it do that? You know, why would evolution need it to do that? It doesn't. You know, they're over-designed. They're fantastic, but they don't need to be able to do it, do they? So, I want to tell you about another bird. This is the memory bird, as I'll call it. It has a proper name, it's called Clark's Nutcracker. And I particularly like this because this has a stunning memory. I don't. I have what's called an amazing forgettery. And I'm jealous of what this bird can do. It goes and gets the seeds from Lark? I've lost its name now. It'll come back to me. Is it on there? No. I'll find it in a second. But it eats pine seeds, and it'll collect up to 100 or 150 at a time. And it can store them below its tongue after eating some of them. And then it flies around the forest, and it buries them 4 or 5 at a time. And it goes like 20 miles or so round from where it's taken them from. And it doesn't do this once or twice. Oh no, it's doing this something like 500 seeds an hour, so that's 3 trips an hour. And it might put 30,000 seeds into the ground in a 20 mile radius of where the tree is that it started from. And then it remembers where it put them. That's stunning. And it's buried them 2, 3, 4 inches down. Now, 9 or 10 months later, you know, it's gone round and eaten its stores up and it's lost a few to squirrels or whatever. It's forgotten where it left some of them. And that's how this tree propagates itself. It relies on the fact that this nutcracker forgets where it leaves some of them. And it chooses to go so far away, like 10, 15 miles away and stuff, to spread out. And these pine seeds don't have wings on like most trees do. You know, it can't spread out, so it would choke itself to death and repropagate itself right below itself. It'd be absolutely useless. But they depend on each other. So how did that evolve? Because you needed both at the same time. Oh, it's called a white bark pine tree. I found the name now. But why? And I'll say because it was designed that way. Quite simply. In Job 39, we have the ostrich. And it's presented as an example of forgetfulness. And it says, which leaveth her eggs in the earth, and here it is, and warm them in the dust, and forgets that someone's foot might crush them. And it goes on to say that because God has deprived her of wisdom, and neither has he imparted to her understanding. That's Job 39. But it really does lay their eggs out in like a shallow scrape in the ground like that. And some of them do get trampled, and that's the end of them. So, these creatures, if it was evolving, it would get cleverer. It wouldn't do it, would it? But it still would stay the same for however long. The woodpecker. I mean, this one's a cracking one. I mean, a woodpecker. It can fly, I'm jealous, as I've already said. It's got a built-in drill. It's got special shock absorbers in its beak. It's got a skull designed in a particular way to spread the load as it headbutts a tree, repeatedly. It doesn't get severe migraines from it. It doesn't cause itself brain damage. Oh, and it's got its toes in a different way. Instead of 3 and 1, it's 2 and 2, so it can grip onto the side easier, onto the bark. He's even got stiffer tail feathers to help him with that balancing act that he's doing. And he's got a long sticky tongue to stick down the hole that he's drilled so that it can pull out what he's trying to get. So he's got to have a sticky tongue, he's got to have a drill, he's got to have a special skull, he needs his toes in a particular way to stay there, and he needs extra stiff tail feathers. And without all of these, it doesn't work. How did he evolve 5 things at once, finished and complete? Why would anyone believe that it did? You know, the only sensible decision for me is it was designed that way, it was made that way for his special way of living. And then we've got this hummingbird that I mentioned before. Apparently it's about the smallest bird there is in nature. And it can still fly and I can't. It weighs 1/14 of an ounce, or for those of you that are younger than me, 4 grams. It's got a lot in common with a helicopter. It can fly backwards, sideways and even hover. I mean, that's just showing off, if you ask me. Its rate of metabolism is so high, it almost has to feed constantly. But then it's got no night vision. So it shuts down almost to hibernation at night to get through the night so that when it wakes up in the morning and goes immediately to feeding again, it can carry on. And yet this tiny little thing of 4 grams has got some of the most complex flight mechanisms known. I could tell you all about them, but maybe I'll just get too jealous about it. But it can do pitch like a helicopter. It measures air pressure and wing position and adjusts itself all the time. So it's got active wings. And it's got parts of it that almost act like a propeller to give lift and propulsion. So it's more like a Harrier jump jet that can go up and across. And it's amazing. It's almost got jet-assisted takeoff, apparently. And it's got special aerofoils for landing and taking off. 2/3 of the weight of the bird is just its wings. And it's got high metabolism, temperature, blood pressure, hyperactive heart, and it needs all of these things. How did it develop them all in 4 grams? It didn't, did it? It must have been designed. I just cannot believe why anyone would believe it evolved. Oh, retractable landing gear and camouflage and migration navigation. No, it's got sat-nav in it. In 4 grams. It was design, wasn't it? It didn't evolve. Job 39, verse 26. Is it by your understanding that the hawk soars and spreads its wings towards the south? Is it at your command the eagle mounts up and makes his nest on high? On the rock he dwells and makes his home, on the rocky crag and stronghold. From there he spies out his prey, his eyes behold it from far away. God's telling us about some of the creatures he's designed. If I move on to the dragonfly, now this is really taking the mickey because this is far smaller and it still flies. So the dragonfly. There's a couple of odd things about this. It's got eyes that are better than the best HD camera that we can have at the moment. And they're obviously still quite big, the proper professional ones. Apparently it takes 200 pictures a second in equivalence. And I just think that's amazing. But people describe this as a living fossil. Because they found it 300 million years ago, according to the radiocarbon dating, which you can think about whether you believe the dates they come up with. But they found it, they think it's 300 million years ago, and it's still the same as today. So for 300 million years, this is one of the laziest creatures ever, according to evolution, because it's not changed. But then I looked a bit further, and this stasis thing applies to cockroaches and starfish and horseshoe crabs and frogs and shrimps and a whole host of insects. But nobody mentions that when they tell about evolution, that lots of creatures haven't changed, but I still wouldn't say they're the best they could possibly be from an evolutionary point of view. I think they're the best they can be from a design point of view. And apparently this dragonfly was studied by a certain Igor Sikorsky. You might have heard of him. He made aeroplanes. Not aeroplanes, helicopters. But he found out a lot about flight from studying this insect. This dragonfly. It's too complicated to have evolved. And why would anyone believe it? Just why? So, I'll move on. So, I've done the flying now. And I'll go through some of the others a bit quicker. I'm also rubbish at swimming. So I get quite jealous with dolphins and things, and whales and how fast they go, etc. And the reason I picked this is because it says, according to the evolutionists, the scientists, that a cow is more closely related to a dolphin than to a horse. So this is where creatures have come out of the sea onto the land, and in the case the cow got bored and decided to go back and turn into a whale or a dolphin. That's what they claim. So I just think this is silly. But my sister's married to a dairy farmer. And they raise beef and cow milk, effectively. If I asked him whether he thought that a cow would turn back into a, a whale or a dolphin, he's just going to laugh his head off at me, isn't he? And I want to show you just how silly I think this particular one is about cows turning back to Wales. Because there's a good old bus. Julie might even tell you what model of it is later. But you've got to change a bus with good accidents, many of them, into a submarine, into the yellow submarine. That's what you need to do to make a cow go back into a dolphin. It doesn't make sense, does it? That you can, by accidents, turn a bus into a submarine that works, that doesn't leak, and you don't die in it when you go in it. But that's what evolution wants you to say. Oh, and by the way, that they have to be alive, so they need to be able to talk, think, and everything else that we do. This is a good one. There's a thing called the cleaner fish, and they like to clean the teeth of sharks. And you possibly can't see it, but that there is a fish going inside the mouth of a shark, voluntarily. I'll say it again, that fish is voluntarily going inside the mouth of a shark. How did it learn that it could get away with it? Because normally the shark would eat it. How did the shark learn that letting the cleaner fish inside meant that he got a free checkup on his teeth and a quick tidy up and a spit and polish or whatever they do at the dentist nowadays? So that's exactly what it does. It maintains the health of the teeth of the shark. And it comes back out happy and full, and the shark goes off and finds it and gets its next appointment. Please don't try and tell me that this evolved, because why would the shark have allowed it and not eaten in the first place? Why did the cleaner fish ever think of even trying it on? It had to be designed. So, this one's good. The Venus flytrap. I was intrigued by this, so I had quite a read about this, and it's the plant that likes to eat flies, apparently. Well, apparently it doesn't really, it tends to eat ants because they're daft enough to climb up and walk across it. It doesn't catch many flies at all because it tends to catch the ones that are a bit rubbish at flying and fall into it more than actually anything else. But to be functional, it needs to have a trap mechanism, trigger hairs, the ability to shut the trap, and the ability to digest whatever it catches. And that's all got to evolve at the same time to make it work. But then I discovered the key thing. It doesn't need it. It doesn't need to catch flies or ants or anything else. It's got a root system and can live perfectly well without. So this is it's about as much use as me growing a vase on my head. You know, I don't need to, but it's done it because it was designed that way, not because it's evolved. Now, why would anyone think it's evolved something it doesn't need, because it can get all it needs from its root system? It's definitely not the survival of the fittest, is it? Now, I've told you about the woodpecker who I would have thought would have a migraine permanently to the point that he'd have brain damage and die, but no, he's got all the things he needs designed that makes him work. This one's similar. The giraffe. Apparently, his heart weighs 24 pounds, or in new money, 10 kilos. It pumps 16 gallons a minute. And if you want that in litres, times it by 4.54. But it's a lot. It's over 60 litres a minute. He's got special valves in his arteries that control his blood supply. Why does it do this? Because when it stoops down, it would have blown its own mind if it hadn't got these valves. Because the amount of blood that rushed down into his head, he'd have thought to himself, I should have evolved some valves in my arteries to regulate this as he gets the blood rush. But he wouldn't have had time because he'd have died. And all he's doing is stooping down to get a drink. Now, a giraffe's long neck couldn't have evolved because it needed to be fully functional with these valves and everything else in the first place. Otherwise it died as soon as it tried to drink water, and it needs to do that quite often, like most of us. So why would you think it evolved itself? And then finally I've got one more that I find an amazing creature. I found it so amazing that I found it, its website that says it's endangered. And this is an octopus that apparently lives in trees. I mean, normally they're amphibious, and when they're early life, that they spend in the water. And when the mating season's on, they go back to their ancestral home where they were born. But the moistness of rainforest apparently means, and there's some slight skin adaptions, means they can actually come out of the water and they like to wander around trees. And apparently it's very inquisitive and very intelligent, and explores the canopy, and it's so clever it can find its way in and out of all these trees back to the water again. And it doesn't dry out. Well, I think I warned you earlier that some of the stuff that you find on Wikipedia is not true. That's totally a fake. But I actually think that that is as believable as some of the things that the evolutionists ask you to believe. There's no such thing as a tree octopus. But there might as well be, if you're going to believe that cows have turned into dolphins, or that a woodpecker has got all its things changed at the right time so it can pet trees without giving itself a great big headache, or the giraffe hadn't got valves and a long neck at the same time, otherwise he'd be blown his own mind with the rush of blood. You know, I know it's a fake, but it is just as difficult to believe, or as easy to believe, as any of those other changes of creatures that we're supposed to believe if evolution's as it says. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, science and evolution have so many things that I'm expected to believe. It's unbelievable. There's no other way of putting it. So, I'd like to suggest to you that the gradual evolution of super swifts, memory birds, hummingbirds, woodpeckers, dragonflies, whales with their cleaner fish, with the Venus flytrap and the giraffes, for them to have evolved is no more ridiculous than that octopus. And what I'm hoping I've suggested to you is that evolution needs lots of things to change at once at the same time, not bit by bit over a long time. I mean, I don't know if you've walked down the street recently and found a chimp knocking on your shoulder saying, "Excuse me, can you tell me the way to the nearest train station?" But there should be, if chimps are going to keep on evolving into humans, why aren't there some coming and talking to me? So I can't believe in evolution is what I'm getting to, because I think there has to be not hundreds of thousands, but millions of unbelievable events to change all these creatures from one to another, to another, to another, to another. So why would you ever believe it, is what I would like to say. I'm now going to show you a quote, which is from a very famous atheist that I found called Charles Smith. And he calls it the genealogy of man. And this is what you need to believe evolution, and you need to believe far more than that. He said, "In the beginning was matter, which turned into the amoeba." So magically, matter that's dead turned into the amoeba, a living thing. Oh, okay. Not a big leap, obviously. It's a huge leap. Why would that happen? And that's over time turned into the worm, apparently, which turned into a fish, which turned into an amphibian, which turned into a reptile, which turned into the lower forms of mammal, which begat a lemur, which turned into a monkey, which turned into man. And in between, don't forget, the cows had to decide to go back to being whales again. That's what you're being asked to believe. So my question, my big question to you is, why on earth would you believe this? I think it's far more sensible to believe in one simple thing, that there is a God, there is a creator, there is a designer, that's all-powerful, all-knowing, and far cleverer than us. And he designed the earth and all the creatures in it. And I would suggest to you that this is the correct thing, that listed here in the Bible that I know I've not referred to much, but I want you to read the whole thing, not get you to read one little section now. But that's the important thing. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And by the time we get to Genesis 2, the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living creature. And he also created all the other creatures around us. The insects, the things I'm jealous of, the things that can fly, the things that can swim better than me. So that's your choice as far as I'm concerned. In yellow, millions and millions of unbelievable changes that happen by chance. Or just accept the fact that there is someone cleverer than you out there, and his name is God, and he created the earth, the universe, and all of us in it. And if you want, then look in this book and find out what his plan is with you, with all of us, with this earth. And by the way, it's also the best self-help book as well. It'll give you so much advice about life and all the other why questions that you might ever ask. Whether it's why can't I live forever? Well, actually you can if you look into that. So at that point, I want to leave you with the sort of request to, whenever you get time on your own, think about why, about what's around you, the creatures, and just remember that it's too unbelievable that they evolved. It actually is believable to accept that there is a God that created all. Thank you very much.